Hey guys, there are ghosts. Or are there? We're going to talk about all of the news surrounding Ghostbusters and give our thoughts on the new reboot. This is Sci-Fi Weekly.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Sci-Fi Weekly.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk Network, Sci-Fi Weekly. I'm your host, Zach Wilson. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm excited to talk about all the news today. We've got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. I've got my co-host here, Jesse Klein.
Hi, everyone. How's it going? This is going to be an awesome episode. We got an awesome guest.
Yeah.
I'm ready to get into it, talk about the newest movie out there. Everyone's talking about it.
Why don't you introduce our guest?
I'm getting to that. Jeez. I'm Jesse Klein. You can find me on Twitter at JessKlein1. And next to me is my good friend, Sarah Clark. Sarah, say hello to everyone.
Hey, everybody.
She's a funny comedian and writer and has a lot of experience with the television business.
True.
Yeah.
The television box, you say?
Yeah. She worked on our favorite show, S.H.I.E.L.D.
I did work on S.H.I.E.L.D.
Ooh.
Yeah.
But that is not the capacity that I am here in today.
No.
No, but we will discuss
former
that.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. PA. Former Clark, weighs in.
Former Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. PA.
I have many questions for you that we'll talk about off the air. But no, there's a whole bunch of stuff to talk about, guys. And later on the show, we're going to talk through Blade Runner 2, released their first concept art. There's a bunch of Star Trek stuff that we'll be going over throughout the show. Get some sci-fi in real life to talk about. And then later on the show, we're going to give our review of Ghostbusters. We've got a lot of thoughts. I have a lot to say about this movie.
Sure.
But you're going to have to wait for it, or click the little button that after the show we'll put down below with the time code so you can skip ahead of all the news.
And I don't know your thoughts on this movie. I'm very
excited. No, I've refrained from discussing it with either of you because I want to get all opinions live so we can react. All right. So there's a lot. There's tons. Too much news.
There's
to talk
so much
about.
News.
The only way to get through it all is to move at ludicrous speed.
Ludicrous speed! Go!
Star Trek Beyond comes out in just a few days, and writer Simon Pegg has basically said, don't watch the trailers. Don't even Google them.
Don't
watch your television set.
So I'm just doing what Simon Pegg wants me to do?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I will let Simon Pegg boss me around. In this case, he said that they are hugely revealing spoilers, and that you should definitely not watch them, so avoid your television sets for at least 3 more days.
Also in Star Trek news, we get a Star Trek 4 greenlit. It's already greenlit.
Free promotion for the movie.
Exactly. possibly Chris Hemsworth might appear based off what they're saying the plot is about.
Well, that lines up. Star Trek 4, time travel.
Yeah. Oh, maybe man. Get some...
Or wait, was that 3 or 4?
No, 4 was time travel.
Yeah, was time travel,
If they keep to this, like, let's just remake the movies that already exist that you could watch on Netflix for free thing, I will be looking forward to that one because Star Trek 4 is the best one.
Star Trek 4 is the
in
best one?
In my opinion.
I do like Star Trek 4.
Yeah.
But there is actually more Star Trek coming to Netflix,
except if you
live in the United States or Canada. They announced that the new Star Trek series that here will be airing on CBS and CBS All Access will be airing on Netflix everywhere else but North America. So, those of you who are international, enjoy your easily accessible Star Trek. The rest of us have to download CBS All Access.
Yes, or watch CBS. Tangentially, Rod Roddenberry is developing a new series called Holoscope. It takes place in World War II and like some...
Holoscape.
Holoscape? Yeah, that's the word. A Holoscape. It takes place during World War II. They uncover some sort of weird conspiracy that all of mankind has been controlled by one thing.
It's also World War III. Just read the notes, Jesse.
I don't read anything.
The idea of a period science fiction thing I'm going with this World War II thing. World War II science fiction sounds really cool.
It does
sound obviously
cool.
The entity that's been controlling everyone is like, I don't know, like... Harry Kim on the holodeck.
Robo Hitler.
Yeah.
Robo Hitler is controlling us all.
World War III. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's World War III.
We
will revolve around young heroes to escape the dark they find.
Sure.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, anything from the Roddenberrys, like, we're going to pay attention to. But just like we'll pay attention to anything from Neil Gaiman. And we got a new photo from American Gods this week of Technical Boy. Every time they release a photo from this, I'm just more and more in.
A photo or casting? I'm just like, yes, it's exactly what I would do.
Everything is amazing. About this is just like the weird clothing that's like too futuristic and too modern for comfort.
I did think in the book that Techno Boy would be fatter. But it's Hollywood, I understand.
They did write him that way. Yeah, they did. To be overweight, but I could see this guy being just as like weird and awkward and uncomfortable to be around.
Yeah, and like the perception of nerd has kind of changed from being like fat basement dweller to like more now like pretty much anyone can be a nerd. Like
fedora,
yeah.
We did also get some more American Gods released this week because we don't have the photo because it literally came out like right before the show. But Bilquis, they have a photo of, so you can go look that up online.
Wait, that's not Bilquis.
No. It just came out, so we didn't even have time. We didn't even have time to grab the photo, but I saw that it was out there. Bilquis, the goddess of love. Mm-hmm. They have photos of it, basically just red light.
In Star Wars Rogue One news. Alan Tudyk gave some details about the robot K2. It's a converted Imperial droid that's now on their team.
Yeah.
They've reprogrammed it.
And he's probably the best friend Cassian has.
Yeah.
I love that, like, there's, like, a gif going around where he's just, like, handed something to carry and he just drops it forlornly. Like,
yeah.
Fine. I love it. Alex Garland, who you may know as the director of Ex Machina, has released some new set photos from Annihilation, which is one more picture down. Stuff's out of order.
There we go.
And it looks awesome. This film, it follows a group of women consisting of an anthropologist, a surveyor, and a psychologist and a biologist. There's a lot of scientists going around.
Many scientists.
And it's a dangerous mission in a land where, this was the quote I saw, laws of nature do not apply. And so that's why we're seeing this, like, distinctly bizarre looking, like, there's like a mist if you go through these photos. There's this
very
grass.
Lush.
This grass, like, it has a very samurai feel.
Yeah.
Across all these photos. Like, it almost looks like, Kurosawa film.
Yeah, it looks.
Yeah,
yeah, it looks very
so
distinct.
I don't know what this is going to be, but if it says like crazy as Ex Machina,
yeah,
I'm in.
As you guys will soon find out, I will watch anything with female scientists in it. So
yeah.
I'm going to see it.
Anything with a female scientist.
Yep.
I think we're now on to discussion.
Oh no! Well, we've got one more.
Sorry. Quesada drew the first poster for Luke Cage.
I want it right now.
I want to watch this show. Yesterday. This looks awesome. It's,
yeah. There's the San Diego Comic-Con starts tomorrow. The panel for Luke Cage is tomorrow at 5:00. And supposedly they're going to be showing the first footage there. We won't get to see it, but somebody will.
No, we won't get to see it until 30 seconds after the panel wraps, and then it will go on the internet.
Yeah. Well...
Sorry, Comic-Con people.
Unless James Gunn is right and they have patented some new secret technology that doesn't let you film anything, we'll see. Well, that's going to do it for today's Ludicrous Speed. So let's move into some quick discussion.
Later to a concept art.
Yeah. So we can kill that Ludicrous Speed music. But Blade Runner 2.
Androids dream of electric... Sheep Boogaloo.
Oh my god. But they Entertainment Weekly put out their first series of images this week. Just three photos showing basically the city.
Yeah.
Is all we see. We don't see anything. No one knows what the hell this is going to be about.
Yeah.
Do we know whether it takes place in another future Los Angeles, or are we somewhere else in the world? Or
This looks like we're still in Los Angeles if we look at these photos. I mean, I guess it could be any big city.
I mean, some of this looks like present-day Los Angeles.
Yeah. Except that. That looks distinctly like we're in a train station,
and
those don't exist here.
Yeah.
I know we just got a train, but I don't expect it to last long
for
taxi unions or someone are like, no, I'm buying this and shutting it down. again.
Yeah.
What if that's the North Hollywood Metro station in like 2048 or something?
I believe it.
I mean, that was like the most futuristic and unbelievable part of Her was when they had like, he was like, I'm just going to take the train to all these places. I'm like, that's not
how you do it.
That's not the future. Director Denis Villeneuve, can't pronounce names.
Yeah.
But he did confirm that Blade Runner 2 is going to take place decades after the original Blade Runner. So it will like effectively like the same amount of time has passed in the real world and in this future.
And so, but we have no idea what it's going to be about. I assume replicants?
Yeah, in some way. Well, Harrison Ford is confirmed.
Great.
For the movie, and then Ryan Gosling is in it as well.
Okay.
That's all we know.
That's all we know.
That's literally all we know.
And that extremely rad concept art that we just saw.
Yeah.
And the last bit of news that I wanted to get from you guys, just thoughts on some more Star Trek stuff, but J.J. Abrams came out and said that with the announcement of Star Trek IV, they are not going to recast Chekhov.
I think that's
Anton
right
Yelchin enough. Will not... He won't be in the next movie because he unfortunately passed away, but they will not recast the role. Do you guys think that that's the smart move, or is it better to just have someone new come in to play the role?
Mostly because the original series, Chekhov is not always... Like, he was part of the main cast, but like there are lots of episodes that he's not in. It's completely feasible to me that, like, oh, he just, you know, isn't here this week.
And it's an alternative timeline, so, you know, if Chekhov is not part of the Star Trek crew, it's because of all of the weird stuff that's been happening in this new timeline. So I think that's fine. Like, yeah, he's just not part of the crew anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the basic thought is that he just sort of like goes off, and then like somebody else comes in, and they maybe they're still figuring out. JJ said they have not figured out how. He has some ideas, but they're going to find a way to just write around it.
I hope for the sake of Chekhov's career that he got a promotion. He's on some other ship somewhere else doing something else. And, you know, because he's like the newbie baby.
He's on the Voyager.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks because he's such so good. Yeah. And, like, I'm really excited to see him in this new movie. So we do have more Chekhov than we have right now coming. But that will be the end of it.
Yeah.
From what it seems.
They're not going to CG build an Anton Yelchin and make him.
No, like, they're not going to do.
They could, though. Get an android Anton Yelchin.
I don't know how.
Could they replace Anton Yelchin with Data? Because in this universe, Data was invented way sooner.
I'd be okay with that.
Here's the thing: they totally could, and like, there's no reason you couldn't like fold in a character from outside the original series that exists,
or,
unless you're just holding it for Star Trek VII
or the Doctor hologram from Voyager.
Oh, yes, no, like that's like I feel like that's pretty canonical.
Yeah.
Like,
he appeared in one of the Star Trek movies that wasn't a Voyager movie.
Well, also, like, because he was a hologram that was created, we don't necessarily know that he was created 2 years before he was in. You know, like, he could have been around for a really long time. You guys know that the 90s Star Trek series takes place, like, 100 years after original series Star Trek, right? You guys are not fake geek guys, right?
Yeah,
okay,
no.
Okay, cool.
I remember a Voyager episode, I think, where he finds his creator.
Oh, it's adorable.
I feel like season 6 or something like that, or whatever what the season was, a later season, a lot of it was him spending his time trying to find out like the nature of reality and like who he is.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watch that show a lot.
Some people in the chat role were talking about there was a Rogue One trailer that they put out at Star Wars Celebration, which was this week. It leaked online for about 5 minutes. I didn't see it, so we weren't going to talk about it because we don't know what was in it other than a shot of Darth Vader, apparently. Great. Which was already confirmed, so not as much news. Jesse's got some sci-fi in real life.
Yeah, that's right. Some news about Elon Musk's Hyperloop transport. He talked about how he would use it as like cargo transplant in Russia. And, like, he could use it to just, like, basically instantly send something from the edge of Siberia to Moscow in a series of, like, extremely fast time. Like, a day.
Well, he said it could move it up to 745 miles per hour.
Yeah. which is
that's
insane.
Way too fast. Like, but especially if it's cargo.
Yeah, which means like he doesn't have to worry about breaking anyone's neck or anything like that.
The question is, what nefarious purposes is Elon Musk cooking up with this train?
The fact that this is going on in Russia makes me, like, if it was for good stuff, they'd be doing it in Alaska and we could all see it and know about it.
That's true. That's canon.
I feel like this is how you get Snowpiercer.
This might be how you get Snowpiercer. I also think it might be how we get humanity traveling in tubes.
Wait, we already travel in... I mean, an airplane is just like a tube that flies.
But you're talking about like Futurama style.
I mean, Futurama, like, just going into tubes and like splitting off, that kind of stuff. Because when they describe the way that this Hyperloop works, it's basically a tube that they're just like continually accelerating pods through.
Yeah.
And like it keeps getting faster and faster the more they accelerate
the
these
pods.
The
way I understand it, it uses pressure.
Yeah.
Similar to the way a magnet train.
Yeah.
Uses like it. So it's never touching a surface.
Is it similar to like pneumatic tubes at the bank?
Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like that.
But real fast and cool.
But yeah. Real big.
Yeah.
I will not get on one of those. Until I see other people do it and survive.
Well, you'll see me get on. I'll be the first.
It's been nice knowing you, Jesse.
Yeah.
All right.
I die doing what I did in life. Jumping into tubes.
All right. I think it's time that we talk about Ghostbusters.
Sure. Let's get into it.
The thing everyone's talking about this week, for good or bad reasons. First off, I want to get your guys' initial reactions. Who wants to start?
Sarah,
I don't want to throw
first.
Anyone under the bus because this is
a needlessly controversial film.
Yeah,
I feel like if I went first and then you went, it could be a bit of a point counterpoint.
Great.
So I loved it. I recognized watching it that it is a summer popcorn blockbuster studio movie, and like just like many of those that come out, it's with a couple of exceptions, it's unlikely to be the best movie of the year. Like it's I think you get like Mad Max.
Fury Road.
I was like, Furiosa? No.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get, like, Mad Max Fury Road. You get Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, it's I knew going in that it would be unlikely that this would be a blockbuster for the ages, but it was really fun. I didn't have any problems with it aside from Papa John's, because no one in New York City eats Papa John's pizza. And it was just so... It was so great. There's so much to it that if you're a woman who's been seeing media your whole life, like... All of the characters ate food, even though they're female, and didn't eat salad, and didn't talk about how they were being so bad today. They just ate food. Like, that's something that, like, I think, like, is hard to explain, like, the significance of that.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of moments. Like, they're just scientists with careers as scientists, and no one's like, oh, I should quit and have a baby. Like, it's just, they just get to be people in the world. Also, it's super badass, and there are all kinds of great stunts and special effects, and, you know, it's super fun.
Yeah. I really liked the first 45 minutes of this movie. I thought there was a lot of character to it. I thought that everyone acted the way that their characters dictated they should. You know, Kristen Wiig is a scientist that feels like they should go about these ghost things in a scientific way. She's very strict about that. She also has this need for redemption where she has been kicked out of her tenure and she has to deal with Charles Dance.
Nobody should have to deal with Charles Dance.
No one should have to deal with it.
Even Cersei doesn't have to deal
with Charles Dance. Melissa McCarthy is her ex-best friend who feels kind of betrayed by her, that they were really close. And when Kristen Wiig was a kid, that Melissa McCarthy was kind of the person who stuck up for her and protected her, and Kristen Wiig kind of left her, and she feels abandoned. Leslie Jones is my favorite character in the movie.
Yeah, and I want to get into each character.
Yeah, but like it felt like everything was motivated through character, and that it really, and all of the jokes came out of that.
I can sense there's a big butt coming.
Once we get to the theater, the tone shifts around quite a bit for me, and it made it hard for me to watch. I thought it was fun. But I also don't really like popcorn movies, which is what this movie at some points was. I think tonally, at some points it was a popcorn movie. At some points it was a Austin Powers movie with that Ozzy Osbourne joke.
Yeah, I don't like that part.
Which was, which felt like it was right out of 2004. At some points, the third act to me was the third act of Pixels. It was with better acting and funnier actors, but it was the third act of Pixels.
I can't say I've seen Pixels, but I'm assuming that's a low blow.
It's just nothing felt motivated in that third act.
And everyone's just running around having stunts and special effects and killing bad guys.
Yeah, which nothing leading up to that like felt like it was going to that spot.
Okay.
But at the same time, I left that theater and I saw little girls running around shooting fake photon guns and plasma guns. And I was like, this isn't... Yes, as a movie, I don't think this works. As what it is, I think it works great.
Yeah.
Like, all I have seen is people talk about how excited they are that they get to see, you know, women being a dumb summer movie. And for that, I think it works fantastically. Yeah. And that's great.
It, for me, I'm sort of in the middle.
Great. Perfect.
For me, this movie had a lot of good and a lot of bad. Not like a lot of good and then there's some like middle stuff that you're like, eh. There was like a lot of moments that I loved. And then there was a lot of moments where I'm just like, is that the best joke that you had?
Oh, the jokes were
and
like
there's a lot of comedy that just fell completely flat.
Sharon.
Like the that's gonna leave a mark is like was in the first trailer and was my first moment of, oh no, this might be a bad movie.
Yeah.
And it sort of lived up to exactly what I thought it would be from that moment. I think maybe a little better, which is why I left in a good mood.
Yeah.
But ultimately I enjoyed the film. Like I had a good time. My biggest problems with it are mostly rooted in the fact that it's a remake, like a full reboot, instead of a sequel of some kind. And we'll talk a little bit like about that. I think you could have done a very similar film without completely resetting the universe.
Yeah.
And some other stuff that... well, let's just talk about that stuff, because I want to get into the characters.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because I love this crew. From the start, like, they have a great team, with the exception of Kevin. I hate that character so much, and not because Chris Hemsworth did a bad job. He was very funny. But the character,
doesn't belong in this film.
Well, guys are every woman who's ever been to, like, Transformers, and it's just like, but why Megan, like, what is wrong with Megan Fox? Like, why,
well,
and
like, I, how but I feel hate that her same so way much. With Megan Fox as well. Like,
and I feel like they were trying to make that joke, but they didn't make it in a way where it was clear that that's what they were doing. My main problem with it is not that he was stupid.
Yeah.
Because it's funny when a character is dumb. It was that he's that stupid, and our characters, who I have a lot of respect for and are very intelligent, are keeping him around when he is actively costing them business and doing harm to what they're doing. It's one thing to, like, keep someone around who's, like, silly, or if they had, like, a connection to him that was... oh, he's family, or he saved us in some way. Like, just something that, like, means we can't get rid of this person because he needs to be here.
I felt the same way watching the movie, but then I also kept reminding myself of the number of times I've seen the dumb secretary trope throughout all of male-dominated pop culture.
Sure.
And that character played by a woman didn't ever think twice about it. I've never seen another movie where I was like, yeah, you should fire that dumb secretary. But I did feel that way with Chris Hemsworth, Kevin. Yeah.
I can't say for sure without going back to, like, a specific movie, like, whether or not it is, like, strictly a gender thing. I just know I had more respect for, like, Abby and Erin than, like, I get the dopey-eyed Kristen Wiig.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. But there's a breaking point, especially when the other three are not.
Yeah.
And also, especially in the original Ghostbusters, Janine is like the best character.
Agreed.
She's a strong character.
She's like, my favorite character in the original Ghostbusters.
I didn't see Kevin as like a counterpart to Janine at all.
No, neither did I.
And
I thought one of the things
I really liked about this movie, and I really liked about like the way that they drew the characters, was it didn't feel like a remake. Like none of the story elements were really that similar. There were a couple of like references and nods, but none of them actually really worked. That was my weakest point of the movie, is a lot of the references and nudges of the original movie weren't that good.
The Bill Murray sequence makes zero sense. That a scientist who the entire movie has been talking about, like, we have to do it the right way, we have to use scientific method, then becomes so petty that she opens up the trap and kills Bill Murray. Like, it should have been Melissa McCarthy's character, who's the person who's been protecting her entire life, that opens the trap and kills Bill Murray. But instead, this person who up to this point we've seen very collected and insisting everything be done the scientific way acts completely out of character, and there's no ramifications, or like they kill a guy in their place, and there's nothing. The next thing is them joking about eating stuff. Like
they do kill a guy, and they don't really talk about it a lot. The mayor sort of comes in, and then no one references the fact that somebody died.
Yeah. And then the window was just fixed, despite the fact that they have no money.
I hate that I noticed that, but I did. I want to think, like, in my head, the mayor's office fixed it as part of a cover up.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Or I wanted them to make a joke like, another window, just fix that, like, yeah. Something. Yeah. Some acknowledgement that they broke the same window twice.
Yeah.
Oh, God, they did, didn't they? Yeah, and that's kind of one of the things where it's like, if this happened in an Avengers movie, I wouldn't have thought twice about it. I wouldn't have criticized that. I'd be like, well, it's an Avengers movie. What are you going to do?
Yeah. See, I would have. Like,
yeah, I would have ripped them to shreds just as much. But like, that's the thing. Is like, there were little things like that that kept me from getting fully immersed in it at this, like, towards the second half. Like the rock concert, Jesse, you're saying that's the point where you stopped.
That's the point where I stopped. Like,
I loved the concert scene just because, like, all the metal jokes in that sequence.
But that wasn't a metal band.
No, that part that was, like, a little weird. I'm like, is that the most metal person
they could get? I didn't understand why they didn't just, like, instead of having this weird Aussie thing that didn't come to anything, why they didn't just hire, like, an actual metal band that people have heard of and have them do a real scene, which would have been so much more impressive.
There's no way you couldn't have gotten, like, a true, like, just, like, a metal band.
Yeah. Or if it's like Queens of the Stone Age or something, like a little bit more hard rockin' than fakers.
It had to be metal, though, because metalheads are the only people who would see this demon come out of nowhere.
True.
And I have friends that would absolutely see that demon and go, yeah!
And think it was like special effects. That's I wanted it to go further. Like, I wanted the demon to eviscerate the band and, like, to have everyone in the audience be, like, cheering for it while, like, the Ghostbusters were like, stop, this is not like that kind of thing.
You're right, they did sort of accept it, that it was they realized it was a ghost kind of quick,
almost immediately.
If they had thrown one of the audience members,
something like that.
The audience never panics.
No one ever panics in this movie. No one's ever, except for the very first scene, no one's ever super scared of the fact that there are a bunch of ghosts.
That opening was great, though.
That opening was fantastic. It reminded me a lot of the library scene in the original Ghostbusters, where you see, like, the librarian... walking...
Oh, I should say, we are talking about spoilers. Oh, yeah. We didn't give a spoiler warning. We warned people last week, which I realized
Papa John's pizza.
Yeah, I realized last week, but we haven't said anything about the plot except for a couple jokes.
Yeah,
but from this point on, spoiler warning.
But it reminded me of the scene in the original Ghostbusters where they don't show the ghost. They just show, like, the books rearranging themselves behind the librarian, and the camera just, like, zooms in and she screams. I thought that was really fun and satisfying. I was kind of confused when he was alive. Like, the character, like, we see him dangling over a giant thing of ectoplasm and a screaming ghost coming towards him.
I expected him to be possessed.
I thought he was going to be possessed, or he was dead, and he was just there, and no one else realized that he existed. Like, Ed Begley Jr. would be like, who are you talking to? And, like, they would be like, oh, this guy. And he's like, that guy's dead.
That was sort of, like, one of the things that I There were. That's the thing. There were a lot of improvements. To me, the script felt like I could feel the hand of the studio.
Yeah.
Like, there was probably a better draft of this, and then they brought in a rewrite team to, quote-unquote, punch it up. And that's where... Because the characters are so good.
The characters
like, you can tell
fantastic.
That the writing was strong at some point.
You can tell that there was a script for this that somebody was really excited about at some point.
Yeah.
But there are things where you can tell that major plot points are cut out of the movie. There's the whole Kristen Wiig redemption story where we just get the redemption, but we don't get any of the fall. Where she comes and she's
but
in
she
the,
fell literally through
she
the
fell
portal.
Literally but she comes and she had she's in the Ghostbusters uniform and she says something like you think I'd leave you again and it's like that is in a complete storyline where there was a story where she left the team and like
I think she was referring to leaving her was, yeah. like when she ditched her for academia
because they never really resolved that
except it seems to me more like. That, to me, makes me think that there was a thing where... Because that was so far away from that original academia thing. Like
there was a second callback to it.
You think there was a moment before they left where they're like, where is Erin? Did she abandon us again?
I 100% think that there was a moment where, like, the mayor was like, come work for us. We're the legitimate science team.
Oh.
And she went to go do that. And abandon the Ghostbusters, and then in that third act, she comes back, and she redeems herself. She's like, I won't abandon you ever again. And it felt like that was what they were leading to, and instead, it was her, a respected scientist, clawing at tables and being dragged out of a restaurant.
Yeah. Well, like, just to, like... Some people are talking about, like, BlackRock is saying, he blames the writer, who comes up with that joke, is what is being said in the chat. And the thing is, like, that's what editor. I'm saying to remember, is that there are so many parts of this process that, like, the script from basic idea to what you saw on film has probably gone through writers that are not listed on the project.
Definitely
for punch-ups. Like, especially a studio film like this.
It would be highly unusual if that weren't the case.
Yeah. And, like, that's where I think a lot of those jokes, like putting in an Exorcist joke for a movie that's aimed for, like, a new generation that never saw The Exorcist is, like, not only an old joke, but also going to fall flat on those eyes.
See, I kind of disagree on that, because, like, my favorite show growing up was The Animaniacs, and they 100% would use, like, jokes and references to, like, 1920s Hollywood, and I could understand what I was seeing was funny, but I didn't get the reference. And now that I'm older, I get to laugh at it again because the reference.
I just pick on that joke because I think it's overused.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I definitely think there was, like, a lot of, like, the stuff you mentioned, like, that'll leave a mark. I noticed there was a lot of, like, written dialogue jokes that were, like, cliche or, like, things that would have been funny 15 years ago. And I don't want to be like, there's a writer out in Hollywood that added all these bad jokes to this movie, but, like... There was a difference in tone.
There were shifts, and that's why I say I feel the hand of the studio.
Yeah.
Because, again, like, the first 45 minutes, all the jokes come from character. And, like, all of the funny lines are through who these people are. We establish Holtzman. We establish Melissa McCarthy's character. I don't remember any of the characters' names. Yeah. Yates. And all of their laughs come from, like, who they are.
Yeah. Well, that's part of what I wanted to ask you guys just before we move on, because I want to talk about some other stuff.
Yeah.
With this. Do you have a favorite character of the new crew? Because, like, everybody has, like, the one that the Ghostbuster they love from the original four.
Leslie Jones was my favorite because she was the most grounded. Like, out of everyone, she acted the most like a real human in all of the situations. And for me, that paid off and made me laugh throughout the film.
Sarah?
Holtzman.
Yeah.
It has to be Holtzman. I mean, there's the scene where she has the two... I mean, there are many, many, many funny scenes, and I think everyone has a different favorite moment of hers, but she's dancing to the DeBarge song, and she has the two blowtorches, and she catches the paper towels on fire. Is so good.
It's really funny.
Yeah.
I did like Holtzman. There were times where I thought she got a little too cartoony in a way.
I was 100% okay with that.
Well, like, that moment, very real. It was just, I'm trying to think of which moments it was. There were, like, points where I'm like, she stopped being a real person and started to be a character instead.
Yeah.
But I mean, for me, I just, like, I want to marry Erin Gilbert. I want to be clear on that. Like, that, I fell in love with that character in a very real way.
Which I feel is a very, like, going back to the reversal of the cast and, like, men watching this movie and, like, that's very much, like, if you're a girl and you're watching, if, like, 90% of what you watch, like, doesn't have female characters in it, you're like, who do I like the most? It's probably Egon. I totally had a crush on
Egon. Everyone likes Egon. He's a scientist.
Like, I probably had a more, like, visceral, like, I see myself in that character with Abby Yates. Mm-hmm. That, like, sort of, like, all over the place, like, really about the work, like, getting down to it and, like, I have this project. I want this project to go.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why I just want to be with Erin.
This is,
I don't know.
This is an unpopular opinion, but one of my least favorite characters in comedy is the character in Animal House that is played by
Belushi?
Belushi, John Belushi. Because I don't know who that guy is. Like, he has zero motivation. He has zero anything, like, all he is just weird for being weird. And I had that same issue with Holtzman. Like, I don't know what her dreams are. I don't know what she likes, what she doesn't like.
I got that in the at the end, though. Yeah. And granted, I would have liked it earlier.
Yeah.
But we got that, I think, at that with the beers, when she has that really quick moment of vulnerability.
Yeah.
And, like, that, like, I understood in that moment. And, like I said, it came a little too late in the film, but
and nothing else led to that. Like, nothing led from that.
I knew who she was from the beginning. Like, which may be why she's my favorite character. Like, I understood, like, oh, like, she has trouble relating to people. She loves the stuff. So she, like, is much more of a, like, I'm going to play with these toys person than, like, in her way of relating to the team a lot of the time is
just
of,
giving
like,
them toys.
Hey, I made you a new toy.
Yeah.
She, like, yeah, she's like a puppy who, like, wants to get pet but doesn't entirely know how to get that. But then, yeah, she has these, like, big, crazy, ridiculous moments. Like, the moment that I loved but also thought was a little not in character or made her too much of a cartoon was the thing that everybody loves where she licks the guns and then she takes out a bunch of, which was
that
super
made
cool.
That made me want, like, more Ghostbusters. Because, like, I would watch a ton of, like, the action sequence was so much fun to watch.
See, I hated the action sequences.
Well, this is, okay, so this leads me into the next thing I want to talk about, which is the, like, the new sort of rules to this universe that we've been given. And it's an evolution from
there
the very simple, like, rules of the original Ghostbusters, which is ghosts are real.
Yeah.
We capture them with the particle beam.
Yeah.
And we put them in a trap. And then they go into the container.
And then
beam.
They go away forever, which always weirded me out as a kid.
There's some
but they set that up in this movie as well. They spend 20 minutes talking about the trap and how to trap a ghost. Like, the whole Leslie Jones arc was about getting ghosts in the trap, and that's the only way you can stop a ghost. And then in that final action sequence, they're just turning ghosts into goo.
Like, well, it wasn't the only way you could stop it. It was the only way they could prove that they were real.
But they also say it's the only way you can stop it.
Do they?
Yeah.
I miss them saying
that. Because they're talking, because when they were like, uh-oh, like, we're overpowering it, or we're, like, using extra power, we gotta do it. The only way you can stop them is you put them in that trap. Like,
I kind of feel like the original had the same underlying logic questions. Because, yeah, the original has that same sequence of, like, all hell breaking loose in New York City. Mm-hmm. And they have to blast their way through it. And it's not, it's either not explained very well, or, yeah, they kind of go contrary to how the internal logic
the
was.
Problem with the original is that by the end, they're not fighting ghosts.
Yeah.
They're fighting a god and its representation.
Yeah.
So I think if we're looking at this as, like, in comparison to the original thing, like, it's not a highly logical universe.
Well, I think they pay off because it's a god. The ghost rules don't apply, but in the original... the only way they stop ghosts is by trapping them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This, they have the ghost chipper, which I have a lot of issues with. Not because of, like, can it be done? Like, I'm willing to accept, like, okay, you can do these things. You can have a glove. I like the new toys that they come up with because, like, I do want it. Like, if you're going to do it, if you're going to make a new movie, do something new with it.
I'm okay with all the new toys.
But I have a problem with the ghost chipper before we get away with that.
Yeah.
Because we've established a world where these ghosts are intelligent beings, right?
Yeah.
We can accept that that is part of the rule. The trapping and storing is its own questionable thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the ghost chipper, means you just murdered that ghost.
Do you feel like that's cruel and unusual, whereas, like, the weird ghost morgue that they never explained in any of the original stuff, that's fine. Like, send them to jail forever.
I mean...
Ghost landfill, totally fine.
It has its own questions. Yeah. In my mind, it's sort of like stasis.
Yeah.
Which is the only way that it's a forgivable thing. Especially when some of these are not, like, violent. They just, like, are messing around, like Slimer. Yeah. And you're just condemning it to a eternity in...
Or, like, some pilgrim who's just walking around Manhattan of the 16th just century.
Some pilgrim guy. I'm okay with all the new technology. It just needs an explanation. Like, there needed to be someone to, like, it just needed Holtzman to say, like, I've created this new thing, we can now turn ghosts into goo. Like, that's all I needed, because that never happens.
I just feel like the original universe of Ghostbusters is so loosey-goosey that, like, it's not... No, if this was a Star Trek movie,
yeah,
and suddenly they're, like, turning Klingons into goo or something, I'd be like, wait, this has nothing to do with the original thing, but, like...
I feel the original...
Ghostbusters as conceived of by Dan Aykroyd, like, it's not that specific.
Yeah, this is the thing that I want to make sure we talk about is, as Charles Lee puts it, the Ghostbusters multiverse.
Yeah.
Now, and Charles Lee says, people are whining that it isn't a proper sequel to the first Ghostbusters. And that's, to be honest, I'm one of the people whining.
Same here.
I don't care. It's fine. I like it as it is.
Here's the thing for me. Like, I didn't need the... all the setup of, like, learning to bust ghosts. I think you could have done a movie for people that didn't see the originals without it, mm-hmm. even. What I wanted to see was something that you can do a completely new cast. I wanted to see a passing of the torch that wasn't a series of weird and a kind of uncomfortable cameos.
Yeah.
'Cause all of the references they had to the original... felt so forced.
Yeah.
The only one that didn't feel forced was Ernie Hudson.
Yeah.
He was the only one who managed to just be a person.
Yeah.
I thought Annie Potts was okay because I love her and she can do anything as far as I'm concerned.
She was sort of second in that for me.
I love Annie Potts.
I think it was that Ernie Hudson didn't have any lines that were like, remember me from Ghostbusters, you guys?
I was in the original. When there's something weird in your neighborhood, I'm going to lend you a hearse. Yeah.
Like,
spoiler alert. That was a big spoiler alert.
Well, we gave the general spoiler alert.
I think from a storytelling standpoint, it would have been interesting at least to have the original Ghostbusters represent almost the backlash that was against this movie and have it be like this team earns that torch being passed by the end of it. And like it being like, hey, this is its own thing. You guys cannot think we're good at ghost busting or whatever, but we're gonna do our thing.
I did like the references to
baseball. Yeah, that was great.
Like,
yeah.
Ain't no bitches. Like,
yeah. That was really funny.
Also, the antagonist kind of does embody a lot of those like toxic masculinity.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, which I thought was a good. I was talking to a friend about whether the villain should have also been female, and I was like, that would have been cool, but I'm happy with the villain that they ended up creating.
Yeah, I thought that. I think that would have been too heavy for me. Like, if it had been just basically just all women across the board, you would have felt it even more than this, where I thought that the circus around it's all female Ghostbusters was so heavy outside the movie.
Yeah.
In the movie, it was like, this is fine. Like, they're not, other than the call-outs of, like, they're aware that people are saying and they make fun of that. It didn't feel like they were doing that as a point, which I very much appreciated, because that's when it would have fulfilled all of what people were worried about.
Nothing in this movie felt like people trying to make a heavy-handed point, which is something that I have a lot of respect for.
Yeah.
Like, you can say what you want to say about, like, the bad jokes, which were bad, but it gets that very right.
No, and that's the thing. It's like, let's just do a movie. It can be good or bad. The fact that it has four female leads is great that it's there, and then ignore it the rest of the time.
Yeah, and I think...
just make a movie around that.
And I think one of the big differences is, like, for me at least, I didn't even notice that it was four female leads. Like, it never, like, came across my mind. I was never like, oh, look, these are four female... I was just watching a movie.
Except when Kevin was there.
See, even then, like, I didn't... It did not... Like, I was not like, look at these four ladies. I was just like, okay, here are some scientists here. Yeah. Like,
just
this kind of thing.
Just
like,
because I hated Kevin.
Let's see how this movie works. Does it work? And I think the difference is, yeah, for a woman, like, that's a huge deal. Like, yeah. It's a much bigger deal, and it's more apparent, is what I'm hearing a lot of. Is, yeah. Like, yeah, these are four ladies who are scientists, and they're not, like, in sexy lab coats or anything like that.
Even, like, I expected there to be, like, a lot about, or not expected, but, like, if I'm using the logic of most movies that you see, I was expecting, like, a big romantic subplot.
Sure.
Someone who wasn't sure that she really wanted to do this and thought maybe she should have kids. Like, I kind of expected Aaron to get fired because of, like, women in science issues and, like, having a toxic work environment. But she gets fired because of her, like, because of the story.
Because of Reddit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So real quick, because we are running low on time. I just want to talk about, like, the thoughts of, like, what this movie could, like, the with the whole sequel thing, like, where I wanted it to be sequel, I think, was because there were so many ideas being thrown around.
Yeah.
I heard at one point there was a script where Peter Venkman was the villain, mm-hmm. as he was dead, and it was the ghost of Bill Murray, yeah. like, wreaking havoc, but it's a new crew that is running Ghostbusters. There was one theory I know was bandied about at one point that I've heard talk of, where this was going to be in a different place, and it's a franchise, a Ghostbusters franchise.
That's the main thing,
like,
I heard before.
That was the one that I thought was the strongest, because, like, you could have had exactly these characters. Like, granted, they wouldn't have invented it,
yeah.
or they could be rivals, like, and, like, that get folded in, something like that. But, like, you could have taken these characters and done that story, and not, and then you could have had Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray and Ernie Hudson and Sigourney Weaver and all those people pop up as the characters we know, and it wouldn't have felt weird. It just would have been a new story.
There are pros and cons to that story. Like, I think I do like the deeper philosophical questions of science that them hatching the Ghostbusters and proving the existence of ghosts in the story, like, does. I like that it feels like a reboot and not like a sequel 40 years later, because that feels like a very Brady Christmas or something. Like, I like that we didn't see all the characters. Yeah, I like that we didn't see all the characters being like, oh, I'm the elder statesman Ghostbusters, and these guys are just the Ghostbusters of Tupelo, Mississippi, or whatever, you know.
That's fair. They are going to make, like, so the head of Sony Distribution said that he has no doubt, and granted, he is not the person who greenlights anything, but he said that no doubt they will get a sequel.
Awesome.
They are doing the animated show, which we've talked about, which is set in 2050 and is a completely new set of people because it's in the future.
So no blonde Egon this time?
I don't believe so.
No, like, Janine wearing halter tops.
But real quick, because we only have a few minutes left, I want to make sure that we get a chance to go to our mission assignment from last week.
Secret mission.
It's 5-year mission.
You are a top operative on your most important mission.
Chillcat sent in his favorite moment from the original Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
His top two were you. It was actually from Ghostbusters 2, which I respect, because I do enjoy Ghostbusters 2. You! Like, you worthless piece of slime!
Yep.
Just yelling at the slime. And then when they're turning on the packs, Do, Ray, Egon. great gags.
Great gags.
Do you guys have favorite moments from the originals?
We were talking about the secretary. I love when she answers the door and it's the mental hospital and she says, picking up or dropping off. It's one of my favorite jokes in any movie.
Yep.
I love the commercial they make for the Ghostbusters, which is like the worst commercial ever. And it's just like, they're so married to those characters that you can see in how each character like behaves in the commercial, like exactly how their real character would be. Perfect.
Yeah. I there's so many moments to pick from, but I think, like, just one of my favorite lines, when someone asks if you're a god, you say yes. That's just such a good moment. And mission assignment for next week as we wrap up. What is the, because we're going to be talking about Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, Star Trek Beyond.
Giving
our
review of that movie.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
So am I.
I need to go buy Star Trek Into Darkness so I can rewatch it, because I never bothered to buy it. But what is the best Star Trek film to date? Whether in the original or the Kelvin timelines, I want to know what you guys think is the best Star Trek film. Is it V'ger's?
Is it V'ger?
We'll find out next week. Until then, Sarah, where can everyone keep up with you?
I'm on Twitter at Sarah_Clark. That's S-A-R-A @_CLARKE. It's a lot of pictures of my cat, but my cat's pretty adorable. So, but sometimes I tweet about Leslie Jones being awesome.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram @JessKlein1. That's JessKlein, the number one. You can find me at the Pack Theater performing all the time. This Saturday, we have Bob Odenkirk. We have Adam McKay performing in the big grand opening of the 7 nights a week show. It's going to be crazy.
If you're not going to Comic-Con, go to PackCon.
Go to PackCon. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. I'm going to try to go.
You should.
If I can get in.
Yeah.
Get there early. Guys, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram @ThatZachWilson, THatZachWilson. If you haven't done it already, go watch Stranger Things.
Go watch it.
And then
you should close your computer and go watch it.
Yeah, you should. And then, after you've done that, or between each episode, go to YouTube.com/Netflix and check out the official Stranger Things After Show with me and a bunch of people here from AfterBuzz, which we did. AfterBuzz TV and Netflix partnered on the official After Show. So you can go check that out. YouTube.com/Netflix. We'll be here next week for Sci-Fi Weekly's Star Trek Beyond review. And until then, remember, we're just one lab coat away from being real scientists.
Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Christian Harloff, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network. We would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.